Hi everyone, welcome to Super Metal World. This is Michael.
And this is Ty.
This week we have a good interview with Ryan, guitarist from Minneapolis-based hard rock band Throw the Fight. Spent 45 minutes chatting with him about life as a indie band in the Twin Cities, and sprinkle in some tracks from throughout their entire history, actually, right? Like, they've released a few albums. And
from their first album to their most recent Transmissions, and they're currently working on a new album. No definite release date yet, but they are, recording tracks and organizing and all that good stuff. So,
writing process has begun. Anyway, remember you can check us out at www.supermetalworld.com, all your major social media platforms, and we are available on iTunes and Stitcher. Please give us a rate and a review. Let us know what you think, how we're doing, all that good stuff. Yeah, let it run.
I'm dying!
And that was Bury Me Alive by Throw the Fight from their newest release, Transmissions. And we're here today with Ryan from Throw the Fight. Ryan, how you doing?
Good. Thanks so much for having me.
What do you do in Throw the Fight?
I play guitar.
And you guys are based out of Minneapolis, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay. And how long have you been Throw the Fight? How long have you been doing your thing?
Quite a while. I think this is our 15th year at this point.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so you released, you've been at it for a while now, right? Like, releasing albums, at least, right?
Yep. We've put out a few at this point, and then a handful of, like, EPs and singles throughout the years and stuff like that.
Right on. So, when did Transmissions release? I know that's like brand new, right?
Yeah, it's newer. It came out, well, I guess it's coming up on 2 years at this point. April 2016 is when it came out.
Oh, okay. Sure. And why don't you tell me a little bit about the band Throw the Fight? Like, who are the members in it and what are their responsibilities?
Sure, yeah. So Jeff is our drummer. He's also my little brother. James Clark is our vocalist, and then we've got Cade on bass, and Chris is our other guitar player.
Cool. And how did you guys start? How did y'all meet? Did you go to school together? You know, how did y'all meet and form a band?
Originally, so I'm the only original member left at this point, still carrying the torch.
Awesome.
You know, but originally I did form the band in college. With the original members, you know, we were playing together in some other various local bands and stuff like that. And I formed the band with a few other dudes in 2003. And, you know, we just had a handful of lineup changes over the years. You know, it's kind of par for the course with a band that's been around for as long as we have. James has been with the band for quite a while, you know, ever since our debut album came out in 2008. Jeff, my brother, he's been playing drums for us for quite a while at this point too, probably for the last 6 or 7 years maybe. And then Chris and Kate are the newest guys in the band, but even they have been with us for a couple years at this point. But the current lineup, you know, it's just friends that we've played with for quite a while in other various local bands and stuff like that. And it's just a small circle of people. It's just funny how, like, it's a lot of the same musicians that end up just getting, you know, passed around from band to band to band over the years.
And are you guys all originally from the Minneapolis-St. Paul area?
Yeah, basically. Our singer's from England originally, but James has been in Minneapolis for quite a while. So he moved here to go to the U of M on a soccer scholarship years ago. And he's been here ever since.
Does he still have an accent?
Yeah, he does.
That's pretty awesome.
I don't pick any of that up.
Yeah, you wouldn't on the records, which is really funny. But if you heard him speak, he's got a pretty thick British accent.
You know, actually, we saw you guys at Halfway Jam.
Back
in the day, or that's sure. That's had to have been a couple years now, maybe around the release of Transmissions.
I think so. Yeah, we only played it once, but I think that might have been the last year that they did that festival.
You are correct. I think, yep. I haven't heard anything about them bringing it back yet. But anyway, when I first heard you guys, I actually told Michael, we were both there together, and I said, this guy sounds a lot live like Matt Tuck from Bullet for My Valentine.
Sure.
And I don't know, it's odd, but I kind of just suspected he wasn't American. So we had the opposite experience where Michael couldn't pick it up, but I was like, that dude sounds like Matt Tuck.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's I don't know if he's ever heard that, but I think he does a little bit.
Yeah, he gets that a lot. It's either that or people think he's Australian, which really pisses him off. So that if you really want to piss him off, just say, you know, he's got a really thick Australian accent.
Now, we chose to play Bury Me Alive first because this has actually been picking up quite a bit of traction for you guys on Spotify.
Yeah.
Has, at this point, 1.4 close million listens.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a surprise for you guys, or, you know?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, there's a few things that are contributing to that, you know, behind the scenes. But the biggest part of it was that it was a radio single for us. for a little while. So I know like Sirius XM picked it up and they had spun it for quite a bit for a period of like 2 or 3 months. And then we had a handful of other stations putting it into rotation. So that really helped contribute to a lot of what's going on with Spotify. And then a lot of it has to do with Spotify itself, adding it to some really awesome playlists that have helped it get some traction too.
And has that kind of sent shockwaves for you guys as far as like opportunities? Have you guys been growing every year, or what's it like for Throw the Fight right now?
We try. Yeah. I mean, we definitely try and grow every year, and you know, as long as we're going in the right direction and not reversing backwards, that's all you can really, really hope for. But it's funny how just streaming in general has just completely overtaken downloads, you know? And I mean, it's such a fantastic opportunity for independent musicians to be able to, you know, build a fan base and get on the radar and expose people to their music and, you know, now finally actually make some money from it. I mean, we're actually starting to see, you know, a decent return on Spotify versus, you know, it's completely overshadowed just downloads in general and iTunes and all that stuff, which is crazy.
Yeah, it seems like the streaming, like the modern streaming platforms have like really propped up small and independent musicians.
Yep.
But like none of the you know, the big dogs, I guess, they're at least the studios and the production types don't particularly care for it.
No, you know, and I can see like two sides to the coin, you know. I mean, I think it's funny to me how you see like all these articles and a lot of artists bitching about, you know, the royalty rate that's paid out and how it's a fraction of a fraction of a penny. But the funny things that you don't see people talk about is this is income that didn't even exist like 10 years
yeah,
before
right.
that, you know, so no one was making anything off of this before. And it's just kind of funny, you know, but yeah, obviously, you know, artists like Taylor Swift's and the Biebers and that, you know, they've got different business models than a lot of independent artists do. So I found that instead of, you know, fighting it, you better get on board, because it's clearly the way that people are, you know, listening to music these days and consuming that type of content. And as long as you have a strategy around it and build it into your plan, you can make it work for you, which is what we try to do.
Yeah, and it's not like Taylor Swift and Justin Bieber are worried about their next meal. I mean,
no.
Good yeah. Lord, they're still making a ton of money. So I think I agree with you. Because what, before this, there was Napster and Kazaa.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
People were illegally downloading it. And it's hilarious that everybody back in the day gave Lars Ulrich so much crap about this.
Sure.
But in the end, he was right.
Yeah.
He was 100% right. And you wouldn't have these streaming platforms. I can get off my soapbox there. But yeah, you wouldn't have these streaming platforms if people didn't stand up to the likes of Napster and Kazaa and say, hey, I know it's rock and roll and all to steal and pirate music, but
right.
But it's probably not the right thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think what you need to do, at least for independent artists and independent musicians, is you really need to try and focus on just getting in front of more people. Like, quit worrying about, you know, someone not buying your album because they might stream it on Spotify instead, and instead start worrying about just getting in front of more people and you know, and getting it in the platforms that people want it, and just kind of like listening to what your fans want and reacting that way. That's kind of where your head needs to be at.
Yeah, right on. I think that's a good mindset to succeed.
Well, I mean, touring's got to be, not to get too much into financials, but that's got to be a big part of your returns too, right? Do you do better on tour or not really? Or is it kind of wishy-washy?
It's hit or miss. You know, it depends on the logistics. You know, it could, I mean, yeah, sometimes we do well and other times we don't. You know, it just depends on a lot of the logistics, like if we're renting vehicles and gas mileage. And, you know, for example, we just went to Canada with All That Remains in December. And it was a great tour. All the shows were awesome, but we ended up taking a hit financially just because we were renting a vehicle and the gas mileage was, you know, insanely expensive and all that stuff. So, but you know, I kind of look at that stuff like an investment, and we try and like use touring and playing live in addition to what's going on online and with our internet marketing, and just kind of like compound the effects of everything that way.
And I want to get more to talking about, you know, being an independent musician and what that requires and and that process. But first, let's play another track here. Let's play I Just Died in Your Arms. That's the cover song you guys did. You want to talk to us about that a little bit? It's off of your, for those of, I know you know this, Ryan, it's off of What Doesn't Kill Us from 2012.
Yep. Yeah, it's, we've been playing that song for quite a while. We've been playing it live, I think, since probably 2010 or 2011. And every time we played it live, everyone just really loved it. It's just such a fun, iconic song, and we tried to put our own spin on it. And I remember when we went to LA to do that album, the producer we were working with, he's like, "You guys can't do this. This is stupid. Don't do it." And we're like, "No, man, it's going to be great. You know, let's put it on the record." And I'm glad we did, because that's to this day, it's one of our more popular tracks, and it's a cover song. So
awesome.
It's a good one. And thanks. Here is I Just Died in Your Arms by Throw the Fight. I'm drawing a blank on this. Who originally did that song?
Cutting Crew.
Cutting Crew. Okay. Because I was like, I just introduced that as by Throw the Fight, but I should have said covered by Throw the Fight. Cutting Crew did the original. They get it.
They knew it. You know, everyone knows that song, right?
Yeah. I would hope so. It's a classic.
Yeah. Unless you were born in the last 20 years, then you probably don't, but
that is true. Millennials.
Yeah.
Yeah. So back to this independent artist stuff. So you guys you're still indie.
Yep.
What goes into making that album? Who produces it? You know, where do you get it done? That kind of stuff.
So the last one we did, Transmissions, we did that with Carson Slovak and Grant McFarland. They work out of Atrium Audio, which is in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. So we went out there to do the record there, and it was awesome. And it's actually the dudes that we're working with for the next album we're going to do it there. What Doesn't Kill Us, we did with John Feldman out in L.A. And then our first record we did here with Matt Kirkwald and James Harley here in Minneapolis. So we've worked with a handful of producers over the years, and they've all been awesome. Usually what we do when we're trying to write is just pre-produce the stuff as best as we can on our own, and we do a lot of the demos here with friends in Minneapolis, and then we bounce the tracks back and forth with the producers that we're working with in advance of actually going out and cutting the real record.
I've always been so interested and intrigued by like the music production process. So mm-hmm. what's when you're in the studio, like what's the relationship between Throw the Fight and the producer you're working with?
Sure. Yeah, we give them, you know, as much as they can. I mean, at the end of the day, what's important to us is doing what's best for the song. It's not about appeasing someone's ego and leaving, you know, a part in a song just because someone may have written it or may not have written it. You know, it's about doing what's best for the song in general. So, you know, we always say from day one, if someone can come up with a better melody or a better lyric or whatever, and it makes the song better, then cool. You know, we're gonna go with that. But that's kind of our take on it. You know, we want to do the best songs that we possibly can. So, you know, and that's why we hire producers to work on our records, because we want them to be sonically awesome. And when you're writing your own songs, you know, you're just too close to your own art. You need that outside ear to kind of like give you a fresh perspective on the stuff and let you know that, hey, you know, this part sucks. You guys should probably not do that.
Yeah,
sure. To keep you rein you in and keep you honest about your songs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you describe the songwriting process? Is there a main, you know, are you the main songwriter? Is somebody else the main songwriter? How does it work?
It varies, you know. So with the last record, we did a lot of the pre-production demos at my house. Coming up here on the album that we're going to be doing in April, we're doing them at a studio in Minneapolis called Nightfall with one of our buddies. So, you know, it's usually just starts with like myself or Chris or Cade will come up with a guitar riff, and we'll just kind of demo it out and maybe send some iPhone, you know, messages back and forth. And then we'll kind of usually like format the song and all the music around the song, and then get it to a spot where it's, you know, somewhat polished. And then James will come in with vocals and melody ideas, and then we'll kind of like tweak it from there.
Sure. Makes sense.
And then we send it out to the producer where it gets totally torn apart, and you basically start over from scratch.
Yeah. So he gives you pointers basically. And
yeah, exactly.
If we want to call him that. all right. So the next song I'm kind of choosing to play is His Blood, My Hands. This is an oldie, you could call it, I suppose.
Yeah, it's an old one. It's an angry track.
In Pursuit of Tomorrow is the album that's off of. That was released 2008. Is that Minneapolis on the cover of that? Or what city am I looking at?
I think it's New York. I think it's New York.
Okay. Yeah. So it is. I see the Empire State Building. I don't think that's in Minneapolis. Anyway, talk to us, please, about this song.
Yeah, you know, I think it's about a breakup. I'm pretty sure. A breakup that James had. And he was pretty pissed off about it.
Now, who wrote the riffage? Do you remember that process?
Myself and Joey, our other guitar player from way back in the day. So, interesting story about that record. When James came into the band, that album was already done. So we had the music all finished, and we had another singer at the time. And it just wasn't working out in the studio. So, you know, James, we had played with for many years prior with his other bands, and we brought him in, and he ended up writing a lot of the melodies and the vocals around all the music that was done and recorded for that album.
Oh, wow. So yeah, that's gotta be kind of interesting to come into something and it's already finished. And
yeah, it was challenging for sure. We haven't done anything like that since then.
Yeah,
but that was how that project ended up, you know, coming together at the end.
Okay. Well, that's a good place to swing it over. His Blood, My Hands. Enjoy. About your musical influences as a guitarist, what bands growing up influenced you to play the guitar? When did you start? Whatever you want to share.
Sure. Yeah, I started when I was 11 years old, And my brother and I have been playing ever since we were little kids. You know, my parents like soundproofed our basement and we just kind of jammed down there for hours and hours every single day. You know, for me, it was like Black Sabbath and Metallica. That's what got me into playing guitar and pretty much how I learned how to play was just by learning all of their songs. And then I got into like a lot more instrumental stuff like Steve Vai and Joe Satriani. And then I had like a big blues period where it was, you know, Kenny Wayne Shepherd and Stevie Ray Vaughan. And then I kind of got into punk rock with, you know, Face to Face and MXPX and more modern metal like Killswitch Engage and Thrice and stuff like that. So it's a little bit of everything, but it's kind of evolved over the years. But I think my staples, they always end up being like Killswitch Engage and Story of the Year and Rise Against and stuff like that. I always go back to those bands and find them like major, major influences.
Absolutely. And that always interests me because I'm more of a traditionalist guy. Like you were saying, like I started with Metallica and Black Sabbath, Iron Maiden, Megadeth. I'm really big on thrash. That's kind of where I cut my teeth in.
Sure.
And that same kind of reason why I picked up the guitar. And Mike, you pretty much started off that way too, more traditional metal.
Yeah, with bass, just the old school stuff, yeah.
And I mean, we definitely have our current bands that we really appreciate these days too. Is there anything interesting or different that these other guys bring to the band, like as far as their influences?
No.
Not at all. All mine.
No, you know, it's a lot of the same. You know, I mean, I think you know, Jeff and I have grown up on a lot of the same stuff. You know, James is more a lot of the same stuff, but you know, he definitely likes Iron Maiden and you know Killswitch and a lot of those same bands. Cade is more of like a punk rock background. And so is Chris, you know, but I don't think Chris has listened to anything that hasn't come out in the last 10 years. So
Okay,
anything
sure.
that's old, yeah. So I mean, it's you know, that's more of what he brings to the table. But it's a little bit of everything, you know. And we're always like the first ones to say that we're not really ever trying to reinvent the wheel. We're just trying to write catchy rock songs with some cool riffs and some good hooks. That's pretty much us in a nutshell.
And how would you that would kind of brings me to the next question. Like, I know genres can get convoluted, but how would you classify you guys?
I always just say it's hard rock, you know, and if people ask us, I just say it's hard rock. And then if they push it a little further, you know, they'll say, well, is it like screaming? And it's kind of like, well, a little bit, you know, mo not anything too extreme. I don't know. Like how I'm always interested in that. Like how would you guys describe it?
Well, I kind of think I felt like you guys have kind of a punky hardcore vibe a little bit.
Sure.
But definitely, if you want to make the broad generalization of hard rock, the way hard rock is written these days isn't the way hard rock was written 10, 15, 20 years ago,
Right.
where there is more screaming. And just because, like you were saying, there is a little bit of screaming in your tracks, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's like a death metal band or something like that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, a lot of times people, you know, refer to it as metalcore. You know, I don't, I mean, I can definitely hear that too. You know, we could compare it to like Atreyu a lot of the times. So people, you know, have that comparison a lot, which is cool. Well, I'm totally fine with that. We're big fans of those bands. But yeah, you know, I guess it kind of depends on who's asking too. You know, if it's someone who I know is just more of like not into that type of stuff, I guess I kind of lean more towards like a general broad
Yeah,
description. But if it's
totally makes
someone who
sense.
I know is really into that type of music and might, you know, might have more of a background, then we kind of like niche it down a little bit more for them.
Yeah, well, and like your track off Transmission's Gallows, to me, that's not a hard rock song. That's a metal song.
Right, for sure.
So there are like there's variety, obviously, in you're not just one genre all the time. I don't think some bands aren't one genre all the time. They have, I don't know, they're polyamorous as far as the type of genres they dip and dive in and out of. But definitely, I think there's some, hardcore energy there. As sure. far, and by that, I'm talking, you know, bands like Bring Me the Horizon. And, you know, you don't have the electronica elements that they have. But
right.
But there's that energy there that I don't know.
Yeah, about. Absolutely. And we really draw on that, too, like more in a live setting, too. You know, I think we come across more as like more of a hardcore vibe, like when people see us live. I think our music is a lot heavier live, and it kind of leans more towards that way, like at the live shows, I think.
Yeah, totally makes sense. And that's the vibe we got when we saw you guys at Halfway.
Sure.
As well. All right. So next track, we'll play one off the new album. We'll play Don't Let Me Down. What can you tell us about Don't Let Me Down?
That's a good question. That was the first single off that record, I think.
Okay.
And I think that was probably one of the first songs that we wrote for that album cycle. I think it was probably one of the first songs with the latest lineup too. So yeah, it's definitely, it's been out for a couple of years, but still one of our favorites to play.
So can you talk a little bit about the Minneapolis metal scene, hard rock scene?
Yeah, there's a lot of bands, you know, I think that no matter what type of music you're into, you can find a good amount of bands here kind of doing that. There's a lot of hard rock bands here, a lot of metal bands, a lot of indie bands, a little bit of everything, you know. I think it's cool. I think we're in a really cool, like, location demographically, where it's like you're not on one of the coasts, so it's not like super saturated where no one really gives a shit and you can't impress anyone, but you're still like central in the Midwest and you can branch out into like a lot of different markets with you know, just taking like a 4 or 5 hour drive in any direction. But there's a lot of metal bands that are, you know, getting signed and doing deals and going on to big things, and it's cool to see, you know, kind of it puts us all on the map. You know, what's that saying? Like, high tide raises all ships or something like that.
That's what
is that
it
what
is.
I'm thinking of?
Yep, you got it.
There you go.
Are you close with these bands? Do you guys all have good relationships, or is there any bands that you guys hang out with?
You know, now we used to back in the day. Now that we're older, you know, we've all got kids and day jobs and stuff like that. And honestly, we don't do a lot of that unless it's like at a show, you know, that we're playing with someone. It's sad that I don't really make it out to as many like local shows as I used to go to. But, you know, we hang out with a lot like bands like Cold Kingdom and Three Pill Morning and stuff like that. Like, those guys are all rad dudes and good friends. And yeah, we're pretty friendly with everyone. We try to be.
Very cool.
Who's been signed from that area?
Oh man, so many bands. I mean,
I was just trying to think, like, I'd be interested to know, I guess, if I've heard of them or not.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Quiet, there was Quiet Tribe. They ended up getting a deal with Epic. That was a while ago, though, at this point. Kevin Scaff, you know, he used to play in Four Letter Lie. He's in A Day to Remember.
Oh, awesome.
He's based out of Minneapolis. I'm trying to think who else.
Cold Kingdom isn't signed yet at this point, right?
I don't think they are, but I'm sure they will be. You know, they're definitely on their way, and they're doing the right stuff, I think.
Yeah, we were very impressed with them. They were at Halfway, too, of course. And
yeah.
And, yeah, we'll have to reach out to them too. We'd love to chat with them as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of bands. I mean, like, even older bands, you know, like Soul Asylum and Semisonic and all that stuff. I mean, they help put the scene a lot, you know, on the map quite a bit back in the day. And I'm trying to think, there's a bunch more. You know, like, they're all escaping me now at this point. But
that's okay. That's all right. I forgot Soul Asylum was based there.
Completely forgot about those two bands.
Yeah.
Anyhow. So this next track we're going to play is Lights Out for Summer. This is, again, off of What Doesn't Kill Us from 2012. Got anything for us about this track?
No, not really. I think everyone should make their own interpretation, see what they think about it. We filmed the video in Ohio in the middle of winter, and it was cold as shit. I can tell you that. So that,
there you go.
But even though it's called Lights Out for Summer and it looks like it was done in the summer, it definitely wasn't. We did it when we were on tour with Nonpoint at the time, and we had an off day. So we filmed that music video.
All right. Lights Out for Summer, y'all.
Right on!
Lights out, we're swinging like we've lost control.
And that was Lights Out for Summer. Great track by Throw the Fight. Ryan, how active are you guys? How often are you going out there and playing music?
We're trying to play as much as we can. You know, I think consistently we do about 40 or 50 dates a year. You know, some years are a lot more, some years are a lot less. I think for us, it's more about doing the right tours and being smarter about it, especially at this stage in the game, than it is like going out there, do it just to do it, because we've been there and done that way back in the day. And that's the surest way to like lose your ass financially and end up having to dig yourself out of a massive hole. So, you know, for us, it's like, we want to tour a lot, but we also want to make sure we're doing the right tours and we're getting in front of people and we're moving the needle in some way or another. That's kind of the stuff that we're looking for. You know, we still do a lot of touring like regionally on the weekends. I think we'll always do that stuff as long as we can, just because, you know, that's not too much of a stretch to do. But as far as like longer stints, you know, we try and be a little smarter about that stuff these days.
Yeah. So more like quality over quantity kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, we've definitely had our fair share of, you know, driving across the country and, you know, playing for no one and losing money. I think all bands do that, you know, at some point or another. And it's just kind of part of the deal. You know, it's part of paying your dues and, you know, learning the ropes and stuff like that. But been there, done that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how long do you know, like, what – how long of tours do you run, and is it more normally like you supporting a bigger act, or is it a solo tour where you and
or
and,
even festivals
or you know, festivals stuff like that? Like normally
with like festivals, we'll try and always play whatever festival we can. I think that those are always like great exposure opportunities. We did we're trying to think what it's called, Rock USA in Oshkosh last summer, and that one was fantastic. But yeah, we try and always do festivals. You know, we try and always support. If we're touring, we're usually supporting. You know, I think we're just not big enough to be headlining our own tours at this point, you know, outside of like our own markets that we typically do well in, you know, like Minneapolis or the Dakotas or Iowa and stuff like that. That's kind of like our main circuit. So we'll headline a lot of dates like in those areas, but you know, usually if we end up headlining other tours in other areas, we end up losing financially, you know, and that, I don't want to make it sound like it's, you know, it's a pain in the ass to do it. It's definitely a lot of fun too, you know, but we try and spread that stuff out as much as possible and be smart about it.
And you mentioned All That Remains. Other, what are some other notable acts that you've kind of traveled with, opened for? You know,
sure.
Nice little feathers in the cap.
Yeah, I think the biggest tour we've done at this point was 2013. We did the Monster Energy Opry tour with both My Valentine and Black Veil Brides, and that was 6 weeks throughout the U.S. and Canada. You know, we've done a lot of cool tours. Played with Avenged Sevenfold and Papa Roach, and did some touring with Red Jumpsuit Apparatus and Nonpoint and All That Remains most recently, and all of those bands have all just been super rad to us and super gracious, and we're thankful for those opportunities for sure. You know, especially with this last tour, we were in Canada, middle of winter, middle of December, and just the conditions were brutal. Our vehicle was a piece of shit, and it just broke down multiple times on us. So luckily, though, you know, their bus ended up having to stop for us a couple times and help us out. So yeah, it was cool.
And that's, like, are you seeing them often? You know what I mean? Like, do you see the guys from All That Remains, Bullet From A Valentine, or is it kind of between shows you quick see them? How much are you being exposed to these guys?
I mean, we don't really see them unless we're playing shows with them or on the road with them, you know, but we definitely stay in touch, you know, online and through texting and stuff like that.
Oh, that's really cool. And it's, yeah. They're obviously, like, does their management reach out to you guys and say, hey, they would like you guys to go on tour? How does that part work?
Yeah, that, I mean, it's a little bit different. You know, a lot of times it's our agent, you know, trying to find these opportunities.
Makes sense. Yeah.
With the All That Remains ones, that was our management that ended up hooking that one up. So they were I think they ended up getting tight with 10th Street over the course of Warped Tour last summer, and that slot opened up and they were able to get us on. So it's, you know, I think it ends up being, you know, just, you got to be cool to people, and it's about networking and just kind of trying to get out there and stay active, you know, and these opportunities happen from time to time.
Absolutely. And
yeah, definitely a lot of work going on behind the scenes. The stuff doesn't just like happen, you know. I think a lot of younger bands think that, you know, it's a lot of like luck, and you know, if the music's good enough that people will discover it, and that's just not the case at all. You know, you got to be out there hustling.
Yeah, true. You got to be grinding. I mean, you got to catch a few breaks, but
right.
But definitely, like you said, you got to work on your craft and make sure that you're constantly, I mean, we know that even running a podcast, we constantly have to be grinding too. So
yeah, absolutely.
Totally makes sense. What do you got for plugs for us? Where can people find you? You mentioned you're working on the new album. Anything you can say about it yet?
Yeah, we've got a ton of material right now. I think we've got about 20 songs in various stages of completion. So we're just kind of hashing that stuff out right now. We go out the middle of April to do the record with the same production team that we did Transmissions with. So you guys will see like more announcements and stuff like that leading up to that. But people can check us out at throwthefight.com. All our stuff is up there. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right. Thank you so much, Ryan. We deeply appreciate you coming on the podcast here and sharing your thoughts, sharing your music. Yeah. And we're going to end with Gallows, which is off of Transmissions. Michael, you got anything?
Thank you, Ryan.
All right.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Yep. Have a good night.
Again, that was Ryan, guitarist of Throw the Fight. Thank you so much for listening. Remember to rate and review us on iTunes and Stitcher and all of the platforms in which you consume Super
Social
Metal World.
Media. Yeah.
Social definitely. Media, all that good stuff. We're going to play you out with Gallows, which is one of our favorite tracks off of the
Transmissions album.
The newest release, Transmissions. Pretty heavy track. Got some groovy riffage on it. So
horns high.